You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
All this is Mark. Welcome to episode 204. I still can't believe it's been 204 episodes. Today's episode's all about haunted New Orleans. The last show is an interview with local entrepreneur Robert LeBlanc. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it and you'll find a bunch of places to go that maybe you haven't been before. Before we jump into today's topic, let me talk about the people that make this show possible. Support comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection, the city's premier history museum located at 520 Royal Street in the heart of the French Quarter. Check out their online publication called First Draft. It's a combination blog and online exhibition space at hnoc.org/firstdraft. Through May 10th, 2024, check out their exhibit titled The Mystic Brotherhood, Fraternal Orders of New Orleans. For centuries, Freemasons, Odd Fellows, and other similar fraternal organizations have contributed to the network of benevolent and mutual aid societies that cradle New Orleans' cultural, social, and civic life. Through objects and images drawn from their collection, the new exhibit explores the sometimes hidden history of these organizations and illuminates how they help shape today's city. Additionally, their permanent exhibit on French Quarter life is great. It's an immersive experience well worth a visit. As always, the Historic New Orleans Collection is free. Go to hnoc.org/visit to plan your trip. The most frequent questions I get are about moving to New Orleans. If you're ready to make the move, you need a good realtor, and that's where Liz Wood comes in. Let Liz and her team over at Liz Wood Realty help you find the right place. They can help whether you plan to rent or purchase. Look, New Orleans is a terrific city, but choosing the neighborhood that's the best fit for you can be overwhelming. Liz makes that process fun and easy. Reach out to Liz at lizwoodrealty.com and make your dream of living in New Orleans a reality. Many members of our Facebook community have done just that, and they're thrilled with their new homes. You will be too. The other thing that sets Liz apart is what she does after she helps you find a home. She does a great job at building community and helping you get connected with people in your new area. When you're ready to make New Orleans home, reach out to Liz. While you're looking for a house to purchase, you're probably going to need to secure financing. Reach out to Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast Bank and let him help you get everything in place. We did that on our refinance a couple years ago, and it was as smooth as could be. We went through the same process with Tommy when we were considering purchasing a new home, and it was just as easy. I'll put links in the show notes, but reach out to Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast Bank. Last but not least, long-term listeners are familiar with Two Chicks Walking Tours and their small group approach to public walks through the Garden District in the French Quarter. For those new to the topic, they limit the group size to half the guests of other companies, and frequent tour takers know that size really matters when it comes to tours. They're also experts at curating private tours, including a variety of themes such as literary tours through the French Quarter and a Marigny Highlights tour. The team has traversed the warehouse and the warehouse district and the CBD with groups discussing the city's unique development and characteristics. Summer specials on private tours are also currently available. They've organized private tours for as few as a single guest to as many as 200, so check them out. Find out more at twochickswalkingtours.com and use code BEYOND to save 15%. Again, we'll put a link in the show notes. Now let's jump into today's topic. I'm not much into haunted history, so I haven't done much on the show about it. We did do an episode about Madame LaLaurie that you should go back and check out if you haven't listened to it. Even though I'm not into it, I get a lot of questions about haunted New Orleans, so I've asked a local tour guide and aficionado to join me today. Welcome to the show, Mr. Orion Cooling. How are you, Orion?
I'm great. Thanks for asking.
Thanks for being on. As we were just talking, haunted history isn't something that particularly interests me, but I know it interests a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that's been a blind spot in the show. In 8.5 years, with the exception of Madame LaLaurie, we really haven't covered it. So I was excited to be able to get you on the show today.
It's exciting to be here.
Let's start off a little bit with your background. So I know you're not a native New Orleanian, so tell me about your story.
Yeah, so I have a degree in theater with a focus in history. My first work in the field was working at historical parks. So I was working in the Mackinac State Parks. So I was working at Fort Michelin Mackinac in Mackinac City, Mackinac Island, which is a Victorian Civil War park, as well as Old Mill Creek as a logging mill. So from the gate, I have had a journey of bridging history to the everyday person. And the term we use in the field is historical interpretation.
Okay.
And I think that really applies to the work that I do and the ghost work I do in New Orleans. From there, there, I continued my journey. I was a professional stunt person, lived around the world, lived in China for a while, Egypt for a while, Japan for a bit, Hawaii for a bit. And then I got back into the States, and I was involved in not-for-profit theater work in Chicago. All the time I was doing that, I was spending time working on tall ships, so brigantines, barkentines, schooners. And my job there was to build historical programming about what the ship's history was and make sure people understood and to interpret it for them. I spent a lot of time on a War of 1812 vessel, a lot of time telling the very complicated story of the War of 1812 and trying to make sure people could get it in a two-hour cruise, right? So what I had this training in is taking these complex subject matters that are very, very fraught with nuance and trying to create a narrative that sticks to somebody who can understand it and take it home, right?
Sure.
So I think that really applies to the work that I do in ghost lore. The ghost stories that I tell, the ghost training that I have is part of a heritage thing. My father was a ghost storyteller. I grew up with my grandfather being a ghost storyteller, and his dad was a ghost storyteller too. So it's kind of passed on. Hmm. Growing up, we didn't do a lot of traditional children's stories. We did a lot of scary stories growing up. I had the pleasure of being a co-tour guide with my dad, which I think a lot of folks, you know, it's kind of a staggering concept to spend time walking and exploring history and telling haunted history alongside of your father's. Some of the best training I could possibly had.
Imagine.
He passed on about a year ago, but it's nice to, I always feel like I'm kind of walking in his footsteps whenever I tell these stories.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
So when did you move to New Orleans?
So we've been kind of courting New Orleans for, it was about 7 years. We would, the work I was doing in Chicago, this not-for-profit work I was doing was very intense. It was theater. It was theater with folks with cognitive disabilities, and it was project-based, so we would go hard for 6 months, and I would put everything I had into it. I need to recharge. So we fell in love with New Orleans. My wife is from Mobile originally, but spent all of her teenage years hanging out here. This is the place that she calls home, has always called home. So when we were courting, we courted here, and we got married here, and that was 10 years ago this fall. But while we were kind of looking to recharge our batteries, we'd come down here for, originally it was a month, and then we'd come down for 2 months, and then we come down for 3 months. And we were blessed that we had very dear friends living in Central City, and they were living in a neighborhood that we fell in love with, and we were able to spend months at a time living and seeing it from a lived-in perspective, especially perspective with people with children. So we got to know all the parks and all the playgrounds and all the museums that were family-friendly, which is something I really enjoy sharing with people when they come to town. People have a misconception that New Orleans is not family-friendly.
Yeah.
It's extremely family-friendly.
Totally agree.
And it's one of those things that, like, I just get such a kick out of. In fact, I had this week, and I had some guests with a toddler. I said, let me show you this playground. I think they're really going to love. And we played all over that playground. It was up there in the top of Audubon Park, you know. So then the pandemic was hard for not-for-profits, and we struggled with our funding. It came to a point where we realized that we really couldn't sustain the not-for-profit we were working with and we created. And we made the big decision to close that down and come down here. And this is now year two of living here full time. And I couldn't be happier. I've never been so happy. I wake up every day with a city that I'm thrilled to be in. There's, of course, challenges, but those challenges to me are, we have challenges anywhere you go.
Yeah,
and
sure.
This is a city that really sings to me, you know. I was biking home last night by the Mississippi, just being grateful just to be here, you know, and taking the sights. And also, if I never see snow again in my entire life, that's okay with me. So I grew up in the Northwoods of Michigan with literally 4 feet of snow in Chicago, which is also no stranger to snow, but really it's the gray. I was in Chicago this recently for St. Patrick's season. I was there for 10 days doing music with my live Irish band. And there was 8 days of gray. And I thought I was going to lose my mind, right? I was like, where's the sun? I'm going to die. So it's been a wandering journey to get here. But once we moved here, I felt my spirit settle. I was like, oh yeah, let's have some fun. Yeah.
Well, and I got to know you before you were a full-time resident in the city. And even then, your passion for New Orleans was great and large, as was your passion for Chicago. So tell me about how'd you get into it. It sounds like you kind of did it almost by birth, but what caused you to get interested in ghosts and haunted history here in New Orleans?
Yeah, that's a great question. Ghosts I have a very powerful imagination. It's something that I've gifted with. And so to me, one of the things that was challenging about academia was that academia didn't allow for imagination. Ghost lore allows for a bit of whimsy. Ghost lore allows for a bit of what if, right? Mm-hmm. And that's really appealing to me. Legends are appealing to me. Folklore is appealing to me. I love academia. And I will study history till the cows come home. But when you put a little bit of maybe in there, a little bit of fantasy in there, it really opens up the gears of my noggin. And so when I was studying history, I would be fascinated. You know, my first focus was colonialism in North America. And you'd hear the stories that the French voyageurs would be telling by the campfire stories. So I was like, oh yeah, let's get into more of those stories, the folklore. And I was blessed to grow up with indigenous people around me quite a bit, the Anishinaabe, and to hear their stories, and blessed to sit with those circles. And we talk about the difference between Gumbo Yaya, so folklore, and academia, and how they bridge, right? But they're both powerful. And sometimes when we can't cite a source, we tend to look down upon it as historians. Mm. But sometimes the source is the subconscious. Sometimes it is the heartbeat of the people. And it's not really definable by putting a direct year upon this was the year the story was written, you know? So I like that gray area a lot. For me, the history is and it sings in concert with all that, you know, it's a part of that blend. And that's one of the things I like about New Orleans is you can chase these stories.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And sometimes the trail unravels entirely. And you get to a point where like, okay, was this just made up whole cloth? And the answer is sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is completely nonsensical. But then you still ask the question, why then are we telling the story? And who does it serve? Who did it serve? And why is it still powerful when we tell it to this day? You know, there are certain stories, though, you chase all the way down the historical end of the road and it becomes far more nightmarish than you'd ever considered. You're like, oh, my goodness, we're not telling half the story. We're telling a very finite amount. And there's responsibility to look at that history as well, you know.
Yeah, so, yeah. The Madame LaLaurie story fits that perfectly.
Absolutely.
That a lot of what you hear on tours is simply not true.
Yep.
And the reality is, the truth of it is an incredibly engaging and horrifying story in and of itself.
Absolutely. That's one of the stories that really frustrates me. If I had my choice, I probably would never tell that story again. because it is to do it and to do it justice and to honor the people who were injured in that story mm-hmm. or killed in that story, it takes time. So when we do a ghost tour, one of the things that makes my tour a little bit different than other tours is I will do 6 long form stories
okay.
rather than 10 short form stories. And that's not a story I can do in short form, mm-hmm. right? You need context for that story to make sense. And there's a fascination with that particular story. There's an obsession with that particular story that I also find to be really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
People will come to town to hear that story. But it's like when people come to town and they haven't grappled with the history of plantations and they have an idea in their head of what it is and they really haven't sat down and looked at what it actually is. And then your job is to somehow bridge them from this idea of entertainment that they're hoping to get to the actual reality of the story. And sometimes it's really unpleasant, you know? Some people are really adverse to hearing anything but the narrative they've been told over and over and over again, you know? That story particularly is a time I take apart concepts about enslavement. It's a story I take apart complex history in that time period within the Creoles and Americans in that time period. I also take a pretty swing at the patriarchy in that story. I talk about why do we tell the story of this particular woman when there's other influences around that story we have to consider, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a complicated one, but it's so dark. It's so heavy.
Yeah.
And it's so glorified. In mm-hmm. American Horror Story Coven Season 3, I'm grateful. Obviously, we have business as a tour, or tours have ghost stories exist largely because that TV show was so successful.
Mm.
Like, it's a huge bump. We get references to it every time we go out, mm-hmm. right? But they also did a lot of disservice, but they're not trying to be historical. That wasn't a documentary.
Right.
It's a scary TV show,
right.
You know?
Sure.
And so they took a swing for the fences and missed most of the time, but they created imagery that people are drawn to, you know, there's a gravitas to it, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Was it hard for you to get into it and immerse yourself in the culture here in New Orleans, or did it come pretty naturally for you?
Oh man, I really felt kinship here from the very first time I arrived. And people talk about that. You know, people come to the city and you're like, oh, this place makes sense to me. You know, I had gone on three ghost tours as a tour, as a guest, before this particular moment happened. I went out to go on another ghost tour. I really love looking at different perspectives. I really enjoy to this day just being a guest in someone else's tour. I love hearing someone's interp on a story that maybe I know inside and outside, a new narrative concept behind it. So I went on this tour. This was the trip we went down to find our wedding venue. We came down to secure our time on the Natchez. And actually, we're going to be on the Creole Queen. It didn't work out, so we got to the Natchez, and we were able to book it. We were so happy. But that night, my wife and I went on a ghost tour, and sadly, the ghost tour guide didn't show up. There was just me and eight people. And I'd gone on a couple of these tours, and I'd read a fair amount of these books. I said, guys, I am not a licensed tour guide, but I think I know these stories. Don't pay me anything. But if you want me to walk you around and tell you what I know, I'd be happy to do so. And I ended up doing that with a couple wonderful people who I'm still friends with on social media to this day. One's a romance novel author. And we had a great time. We had a great time. And I sat there afterwards. I'm like, I need to pursue this. I need to pursue this with my teeth in it. I want to learn. I want to be educated. I want to be a registered tour guide. And so I began the process of learning as much as I possibly could. And the more I learned, the more I liked it. And the more I liked it, the more it fed my passion. So I love leading ghost tours in this town. I have a bit of a reputation for it, but I'm also happy because I lead tours on other topics. And this town allows me, with my ADD brain, to be passionate about many things. So I get to do a Garden District history tour. I am the honor of doing a voodoo and history culture tour. I bike tour guide for Buzz Nola, so I lead bike tours for the city. I have a queer history tour that I had the pleasure of writing that we do with the company in June and September around Pride and Decadence, right? So there are so many stories in this town, and the more I tell the stories, the more I realize there's so many more stories to be told. Right now I'm developing a cigar and whiskey tour, and it's going to be about the history of tobacco and whiskey, the good and the bad, as we walk through the French Quarter, sampling cocktails and cigars that are meant to enhance each other. This should be ready hopefully by June, but I'm excited to do it, you know, and I feel like there isn't a real need for new inventive tours. When people come to town, they want to come on a very specific tour. So creating a tour that's outside of the box, there isn't really a desire for it. There's lots of really cool tours that are doing that in the city. There's like a JFK tour that's very interesting, right? And there's some very, I love what Two Chicks is doing. I love their madams and like the evening bordello tour they do, right? So cool. But I have found that people really come for Garden District architecture and ghost tours. And then hopefully a French Quarter history tour. And that's usually the most sought after tours that people are looking for, in city tours by bus and whatnot. I used to lead a nighttime bus tour, cemetery investigation for the Oddfellows Rest. I no longer do that. And that was because I was pretty frustrated by the way people treat the cemeteries in the city. And not our company. Our company had high standards, but you can only control so much. And if you're on a bus, there's sometimes some people on that bus who are going to be disrespectful. And after a couple nights of that, I let it for a couple months, but a couple nights where it was really peaked up, I was like, I'm stressed. This is stressing me out. I'm not doing this anymore, you know? So we do have some really wonderful guides who are doing that kind of work now, but I'm happy to do the walking tours.
So kind of, I want to get into some of the stories, but one of the things you and I share in common is that you are also a podcaster. And you guys did a whole season about haunted history and ghosts in New Orleans. So talk a little bit about that and share with listeners how they can find that. We'll put a link in the show notes, but go ahead.
Well, the podcast is called Shadow Carriers. Shadow Carriers, we are now season 5 and we're trucking right along. Season 3 is all New Orleans, and I had such a great time running that. My wife also wrote a couple episodes on as well. It was fabulous to draw out the stories because, again, on a walking tour, you have a finite window. You have all the stimulation going around you. People, there's a second line around the corner, and there's eight drunk guys over there and a horse trotting by you. In a podcast, I could really take the stories out and unpack them and give them as much context as possible, but also enhance them with scoring, sound effect, guest actors. It's not just my voice the entire time. It's like a radio drama.
Yeah, you guys did a great job with it.
We have a lot of fun with it, and we work really hard on it, and we're really pleased that season 6 will also be New Orleans. We actually started writing season 6 right now. We're doing season 5 currently, but season 6, we're returning to New Orleans. I got some more stories that I want to tell. There's a particular story that might end up being a three-parter because I've written it out in a kind of a very grand way. But it was a real joy. And what I really liked about doing that particular season is there are stories that we're not telling on our walking tours.
Okay.
And there are stories that are really, really good that are not being told. Sometimes they're not being told because they're hard to digest. And sometimes they're not being told because they are off the beaten path of the certain routes that people take.
Sure.
And so I had a really good time yanking some of those stories out and bringing them into the narrative. And some of these stories come from, there's a book called Ghost of New Orleans by Jean Delevingne that is a problematic book. It is a book of the time period. There's language and descriptions in there that are not appropriate for modern context. But it was also really joyful to go back to the kind of source material that all these ghost tours are going from and saying, where did we start and how far from the source are we right now?
Okay.
And the answer is pretty far. But to go back and say, there are stories in that book that I cannot wait to explore, and they are horrifying and thrilling and exciting and an opportunity to explore and enrich history. You know, there's some of the stories that they collected from the 1930s and put out that are just staggering. And the fact that they're not part of the narrative, that we're telling that one other story over there, which is not any good at all, and we're not telling this other cool, scary story. I'm like, well, we can fix that in the podcast. So we've been doing that, and that's been a lot of fun. So, yeah.
Yeah, so you kind of just touched on that a little bit, but what do you think is most misunderstood by visitors and locals? And maybe they're different, maybe they're the same, but when someone comes to your tour or expresses an interest in ghosts in New Orleans or haunted history in general, what are some of the things that are just kind of you get consistently that are just misunderstood?
That's really easy. The number one thing that's most misunderstood is voodoo. It is the hottest topic that I have to disappoint people on. And people come all the time with expectations. And now part of that is marketing.
Mm-hmm.
I get put on a combo tour at 8:30 p.m. and I'm supposed to talk about voodoo, but there's nothing negative I have to say about voodoo. It's a religion, mm-hmm. like other religions with a capital R. It is a practiced faith. It is an ongoing living faith. There are elements of ancestral connections, which is why you have iconography of skeletons and bones. But I tell people all the time, like, there is a relic in every Catholic cathedral you've ever been into, right? There are elements of the dead that various cultures hold on to very preciously. It's about what you grew up with. It's about your perspective. It's what was normal to you is different to me, you know? And so people want to have me tell them terrifying stories about voodoo, and I don't do it. Because right. The majority of the terrifying stories about voodoo come from Hollywood, or they come from the Jim Crow era, and I will not be telling those stories on my tour. So when I get tasked to do the 8:30 tour, I send a welcome text out, and my welcome text says, just so you know, there'll be no scary stories about voodoo on this tour. Because if you don't, and you get there, and someone expects you to give them nightmares about voodoo,
sure.
Now you've got a problem,
yeah.
Right? So I get in front of it. What I have found is that once you open that door, many people are willing to walk through.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people who come upon the tours who are eager to hear a scary story about voodoo, but then you explain to them why you can't do that. And it turns out if you can get in front of it, they want to take that journey. I'm mm-hmm. seeing more and more a willingness in the guests that I see in the city, especially in the past 2 years, to look at those harder issues and to unpack those harder issues, a desire to speak truthfully and respectfully to the people involved. And it's exciting, but you have to get in front of it. Because if
Good
you don't
point.
Get in front of it, people get really angry.
Sure.
And so my welcome texts are definitely my best friends. So I start expectations in the text right away. And when it's a problem is when we have international numbers who I can't text. That's when they show up and they're like, and again, internationally speaking, the city is known for a concept of voodoo.
Right.
But it's just propagated by Hollywood and it's not mm-hmm. resonant to the truthfulness of the community at all. And so it's a dance that we do, you know, and then I try to find, so then I try to transfer over to the occult and do stories about dark magic. But even that is an act of religion with people who are participating in that faith. And I don't want to speak ill of that either. So it becomes really, really a dance and how to manage expectations, right? Because if you're talking about neo-paganism, there are people who are very, very dedicated to that religion in this town. So I don't want to vilify that either, you know? Ghost stories and horror stories have to have a villain. And you cannot really, with respect, tell the story of voodoo in this town and identify a villain. People want to make Marie Laveau a villain.
Right.
She's not.
No, we did a whole episode about her.
Exactly. And you did a great job with it, right? And I'm like, you can't You can't make this person a villain just because you don't understand them, right? There's a difference. And that's something that we do as a culture. We tend to villainize things that we do not understand. And one of the things I try to do in my ghost tour is I try to work through catharsis, right? I try to work through, we're going to try to break something down to a point where we can understand it. This happens when we talk about the vampires, right? Mm. I have a rather lengthy story I do about the Casket Girls. But I talk about why did we tell the story, right? It is actually pretty easy to take that one apart. One of the most classic vampire stories of the city of New Orleans, the history is readily available, all right? It is not a difficult one to maneuver around. We understand migrations. We understand requests for brides. We can track all this history. It's not the Arcadians. It's not the Daughters of the King. It's the Felix Casquet, right? But we also understand that when a new population comes to town, and they are outsiders, people will talk ill of them and rumors will start spreading. And we start looking at the death around the time period, and we now know what tuberculosis looks like. What I tell people, I said, we can understand it from a scientific perspective now, but you have to remember in the colonial time period, this was a mystery. Mm-hmm. And the mysteries were explained by religion and folklore, right? So you have rumors and stories that build up. It's the same story I told in Salem, Mass. I happened to work in Salem, Mass for 3 years, still part of a museum board in Salem, Mass. And when we other someone, and we don't understand them, and we cast them as something nightmarish, legends will build. So it's one of those things we have to take all that apart. And I got to do it on the street of New Orleans in 10 minutes.
Right.
You know, so yeah.
Right. In fact, you've jogged my memory. One of the episodes I've wanted to do for a long time is to get a voodoo priestess on. Mm. I actually have somebody identified, and I need to just reach out and bring her on.
Great idea.
Because again, so much of what you just said, right, there's this perception mm-hmm. from TV, from movies, from whatever, but the reality is very, very different.
Yeah. And the reality is not sexy.
Right.
Right?
Sure.
And people want it to be, they want it to be like alluring. And I'm like, well, it's not, if you want to dig with me. And one of the things that our particular company, the one that I work for the most, has on their website is that we are historians. And it's true. Most of us are. And if you look at the history, the more you unpack the history, the less sexy it gets. And this is always with history. Like very rarely is history like super alluring. Like I want to go back to the 1700s. Like, no, you don't. It was a miserable time to be alive, right? What a horrific way to live a life. And they were doing the best they could do with what they had, you know? But it isn't super attractive. And that's a balance you have to walk on that ridgepole as well. Because one of the rules that my father taught me about ghost stories is you don't take away someone's ghost, which means I don't take away someone's vampire either. And I don't take away someone's ghost or their poltergeist. I do sometimes take away their voodoo queens. Mm. And then what I have to do is replace that, hopefully, with empathy. And then the empathy we can learn a new history with, mm-hmm. which actually takes quite a bit of momentum out of a ghost tour unless you empower it. So I say, now you're beholden to that. Now you are responsible for that. Now you're part of the story moving forward, you know? So yeah, it's a delicate balance.
Yeah, so I certainly don't want to get into all the stories that you tell when you take people around, but is there maybe one that jumps out at you that would be appropriate for the podcast?
Yeah, sure. I do one. I don't do it all the time. It's on my alternate route, my mm-hmm. 8:30 route. I mostly do a very specific loop. I got two that I think would be fun.
Great.
One is in Two Jacks, a restaurant that we both admire, have a lot of history with. We used to run our pub crawls out of Two Jacks back at its old location.
Yeah.
And I like that because I actually prefer Two Jacks like Hurricanes to most other places. Hurricanes, they cut it with real fruit juice and a little bit of grapefruit juice, mm-hmm. which is nice. But I'm like, if you're going to have this drink, you might as well have it here. And so we would start there and I would tell the story. And I got to tell you, it's a story I'm fascinated by. And I did end up telling it in my podcast about there's a character in history named Julian Eltinge. Now, Julian Eltinge used to come to New Orleans. They were a silent movie star and a Broadway star. And they did transition into talkies as well. And at one point, they made more money than Charlie Chaplin. They were extremely big deal. And they were considered the best-looking man in Hollywood and the best-looking woman in Hollywood. They were a female personator. Nowadays, we might call them a drag queen, right? Mm-hmm. But they didn't identify that way in their history. But they loved coming to Two Jacks. They had a long-standing tradition when they visited New Orleans to visit Two Jacks. Now, Julian Eltinge eventually falls into obscurity. This is for a lot of reasons. We cover it in the podcast. But one of those things is that they were, again, top of the game. They have a Broadway theater named for them in New York City, still standing, right? Mm. It was actually moved about 15 years ago. But if you go to the AMC in New York City, you're looking at their image. They are all the muses. Julian is in their beautiful drag. They're all the muses in the theaters, like welcoming the lobby there. And this is how big they were. And now no one knows about them. They've fallen out of history entirely. But Two Jacks has a tradition of having signed headshots on the wall from celebrities.
Right.
One of the very first headshots ever signed there was Julian Eltinge's. What happens is when they remodel the old dining hall, they take that portrait down and they put it upstairs. Then people start having situations where they're taking pictures at their dinner table and there's a well-dressed lady behind them in the picture, all these snapshots. There's a lot of these pictures online. It's actually quite amazing to see how many pictures this image shows up with this lady, and she's rather sternly looking at the camera. And if some brave soul, some historian, started putting two and two together and realized that was what Julian Eltinge looked like when they were dressed as a woman, and they started putting the folklore together and finding out that Julian Eltinge's picture was no longer on the wall, and that perhaps the way to take care of the problem was to bring the photo down and put it back on the wall from the attic. And they did this, and then the haunting melted away, but they've moved locations.
Right.
And it's no longer on the wall.
Huh.
I was there recently. I went top to bottom looking for Julian. Not there. Now, I don't think it's a personal slight. I don't think it's anything to do with anything. I just think they move locations and sometimes you lose track of things, right? But now I'm just waiting. I'm just waiting for Julian to show back up again in the new location and wonder why their photo's not on the wall.
That's so cool.
Isn't that fun?
That's really cool.
I had another really fun one happen recently. It's actually a new story for me, and I don't tell this one on my tour at all because it's too cute. So here it is for us, a cute ghost story. I had the opportunity to do a lot of private tours for the company I work for. I had 9 people on my manifest. I didn't know who these people were. Showed up, and I have 4 dangerously drunk adults. I've got 4 adults who I'm like, I'm pretty concerned about them just walking through the French Quarter at all. And then I have 5 children between the ages of 2 and 5. I'm supposed to give an hour and a half ghost tour. My ghost tours, at their kindest, are PG-13.
Right.
There's just so much violence. I don't use crude languages. I don't curse on my tours, but it's a lot of violence, a lot of death. So I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to give a ghost tour to these little baby children and their very drunk parents. So I put my sneakers on, I jog my route, I'm rewriting in my head as I go, right? And I'm thinking about Fifule, the will-o-wisp of the swamp. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about pirate treasure. Like, what am I interested in as a kindergarten? What I'm excited about? Well, there's that shop there right next to the cathedral that's known for possums.
Right.
Sesame is their iconic possum there. And sometimes they have wildlife rehab going on. So sometimes they'll have possums in the shop.
Okay.
Right? And I knew that. So I went by the shop real quick and I said, guys, do you have any possums? And they said, we do. I said, cool. Can I bring some kids by to take a look at the possums? They said, yeah, no problem. Bring them on in here. And I know that once I get drunk parents in there, they got all these cute possum stuffed animals and artwork. They're going to buy some artwork. It's going to be good for the business.
Right.
It's going to work out just great. And it did eventually. But then I'm running out the door to go get the tour group to start the tour. And I jump back. I'm like, you guys got any possum ghost stories? And they said, actually, we do. And I said, do tell. So what happens, they said, is that late at night, they'll be doing artwork. You'll hear a clicking across the floor and you'll look back and you thought you heard a possum crawling around. There's nothing to be seen. And then you're working on the artwork and all of a sudden you'll feel something crawling up the back of your chair and you look back and there's no possum, but they know the spirit of Sesame has awakened. And then they said Sesame, their first possum, they only lived to be 3 years old, but Sesame, their first possum, passed on years and years ago. They're pretty sure Sesame's spirit. Sesame's favorite thing to do was to eat grapes. And so what Sesame's spirit ghost will do will sneak up on your shoulder and right when you think you're all alone, bite into a ghost grape and slurp it in your ear. And then you scream and you run around. And of course, there is no possum to be seen. Right. The ghost of Sesame the possum still haunting the store to this day. And here's the deal, kind of back to our conversation. There's no history there whatsoever. It's an artist who's telling a story about a beloved pet. And there's merit in that. It sparks the imagination. The what if has been given and the creativity is there. So I don't get to tell that story very much because I'm trying to tell stories about murder and monsters. But there's also joy in telling stories like that, right? And that's the Irish side coming out for me, right? There's joy in talking about the little people and the fairies, right? There's pleasure in that as well.
So how do people connect with you if they want to take a tour?
Yeah, it's pretty easy. I have an Instagram with a name that I know you don't appreciate. So Nollins_Crawlins on Instagram. I recognize that I should have had better foresight about that name. But oh well, I know locally speaking, the word Nollins is not appropriate. But here we are. I'm pretty easy to find on social media. I'm on a lot of the Facebook groups and whatnot. I'm also easy to email. It's Orion, my name, Orion.Cooling, Cooling@gmail.com. 95% of the tours that I do are through two organizations, which is New Orleans Coast Adventures and Tour Orleans, which is actually the same company, just two different branches of the same company. Mm-hmm. So if you want to go on one of those tours, I offer ghost tours usually 5 p.m. and 8 p.m. every day almost. If you want to, I can help you book it, get my employee discount. That's on the up and up there. They have no problem with me doing that. So feel free to reach out to me. I can help you get yourself on the ticket and get a little bit of a discount as well, which is nice. But yeah, and also just reach out. Shadow Carriers is in all of the social medias as well. Shadow Carriers, we're on all the podcast providers. And you can always reach out to me through that way as well. I do very rare private tours, but I do a lot of public tours. Mm-hmm. I also do a tour that's really neat. It's called Stationary Spirits. And what I do is I bring, I had a local New Orleans artist create these beautiful wooden homes. They're painted as these different ghost story sites. And I lay it down upon a table with candles flickering. And then I can do an entire French Quarter ghost tour at a table. So if somebody has accessibility needs, maybe walking is a challenge for them. Maybe they want to hear a ghost tour past 10 p.m. at night because we have to be off the street at 10.
Right.
And they want to, I was able to do this recently for a bar mitzvah. I was able to use the seance lounge at the apothecary. I work with Marita and she allowed me to use it up there and do a bar mitzvah ghost story session in the seance lounge, which is super fun.
Right.
So I really like that also as somebody who cares a great deal about people with accessibility needs. I think it's a cool way of telling a ghost story without having to walk around. Mm-hmm. So that's a real fun thing to work on. I don't do that as much, but it's because most people want to do the French Quarter ambiance.
Sure.
You know, we can create that. What I like about that particular tour too is I let the audience pick the route. So they pick the building, then I tell the story.
Oh, neat.
And I always bring more stories than we have time for. So there's a chance of randomness in the stories, which is fun. So.
And we'll get all the all your contact information. We'll put it in the show notes for people. You're also very active in our Facebook group, the Beyond Bourbon Street Crew. And again, like New Orleans, we used K-R-E-W-E because it just sort of resonates with people outside the city. But you're very active there. So that's another place people can just post a note and, you know, tag you.
Yep,
and you'll see it. You're very engaged there. Mm-hmm. I saw you responded to somebody just a little while ago, actually, looking for an idea. What else would you offer to people? What else is on your mind that you might want to share about why they ought to come take a ghost or haunted history tour?
One thing I say in my tour is we always take a moment before we start the tour by the river. And I just take a minute to reflect. I said, the city is called the Big Easy, not the Big Apple. Slow it down. Slow it down. Right? Take it in for a second. And we just have a moment where we take a deep breath and we look at the river together. And we just breathe for a second. I tell people on my tour, if you've not sat by the Mississippi and just taken it in for a bit, you're missing out on part of the story. Mm-hmm. If you've not put your back to a live oak tree and just let it sway around you, if you've not taken a walk through City Park, you're missing out on part of the experience. So that's really important to me that people come and they slow it down. But one thing I like to say upon the tour as well is that ghost stories give us a chance to talk about things we're uncomfortable talking about. Ghost stories give us a chance to talk about everything from complicated history to grief. Hmm. And one thing that I find, it's not surprising, especially not for a tour guide trained by my father, that there can be an element of release from a ghost tour. People come on, ghost story enthusiasts come invigorated, excited.
Sure.
Ghost people who get dragged into it don't want to be there. And one of my favorite things by the end of the tour is that we're all in the proverbial room together and we offer a chance to go, huh. And one also thing I try to do is I have a reflective moment at the beginning of the tour, a reflective moment at the end of the tour so you can release the tension. Don't carry that with you. Don't carry the scariness with you. Let it go. We got it right here, you know? So I try to encourage people to go to the Frenchman after my tour is over. I'm like, if you've got gas in your tank, you should be walking that way to the Frenchman. And go dance this out, you know? So the ghost tour should be one part of a bigger adventure. It shouldn't be the only thing you're doing, right? But it does allow us to have a chance to discuss parts of history that we may not otherwise talk about. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important if we're going to move the envelope forward, if we're going to create constructive change. Yeah.
I love that. I love the blending in the history. And also, you're in the French Quarter, but you're getting a different take on the French Quarter. Love the idea of sort of a virtual French Quarter tour for people, because we do get questions about accessibility.
Yeah.
And certainly walking around at night when the court is crowded, it can be difficult. Mm-hmm. They've made some efforts, but it's not the most accessible part of the city.
Agreed.
You know, it can be hard. And then an hour and a half, 2 hours, that's a lot of moving around.
Sure is.
You know,
I get that a lot on the Facebook groups about people like, I can't walk that far. And I like to say that One thing about my ghost tour is that we do long form stories. So we stop.
Right.
And I try to look for places to sit down while we stop. The 5 p.m. offers a lot more of that than the 8 p.m. does. I've also been like really pushing. They have these great canes that fold into chairs. I don't know if you've seen them around.
Yeah, yeah.
I love them. I wish I had a dozen of my own just to give out to people. And it's not even about like whether someone has accessibility needs. It's you've been walking all day long.
Right.
Here's a quick chair and you can walk with it, you know? Of course, that could be challenging to navigate in certain regards, but there are new tools that are being used for accessibility that I think, if I had my druthers, if you could say, Orion, wave a magic wand, every ghost tour guide would be using a listening system, a whisper system. Mm. Every one of us would be using it. The ones we use in museums for art gallery tours, things sure. like that. Everybody would have a headset. Everyone would have this little microphone. And then there'd be no more yelling in the streets of the French Quarter. The tourist would be benefited. The locals would be benefited. The tour guides would be benefited. This takes people on the up who own companies making that investment.
Right.
But I think that we're going to see that coming more and more and more now that technology is much easier to use for it. Mm-hmm. And so like, I wish we had that established for every major organization. And I'm seeing it a bit by bit out there on the French Quarter.
Yeah, because it's loud in the quarter.
It's loud down there. And then you're trying to tell the LaLaurie story and there's 10 other tour guides. Now, good Lord willing, the creek don't rise. We're all 50 feet apart from each other. But that's not always how it is.
Right, no.
And that person's bellowing their story, and that person's bellowing their story. And one thing I try to do is create a quieter environment. I tell people, I want to tell you a story, not yell you a story. So I'm not out there just barking.
Right.
What I usually do is put my people into a tunnel. So that means that I'll have some people stand across from me and some people stand alongside of me. So I'm not having 28 people across from me and I'm yelling at them. I put, you know, a handful, and then across the sidewalk, and I can tell a story in this tone of voice without screaming the entire time.
Sure, makes sense.
It makes sense. It's also spookier.
Sure.
Right. You know, right. No one, you don't get scared when someone's yeah, yelling at you, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. That's great. I hope that you've opened people's eyes and maybe encouraged them to not only take a tour, but also look beyond the sort of basics of the story they might have heard, whether it's Madame LaLaurie or some other story. But thank you so much for taking the time.
My sincere pleasure. I have a lot of admiration for you as a person, but also the podcast and in the community. You create community, and community is so vital in this particular town, but vital in all of our towns.
Yeah, you know? I think that's one of the things. One of the things I could never have imagined when I started the podcast, but the community on Facebook, it's about 16,000 people now. It really is a community.
Yeah.
You know, lots of people have negative thoughts about Facebook, but I would tell you that we work really hard to police it, to keep a lot of the crud out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a good place for people to exchange, both with vendors and with, you know, some of our sponsors, but also with each other.
Yeah.
You know, people come on and share. They had such a great time. And that's the best endorsement you can get, right?
Absolutely.
You know, I can say whatever, and certainly people trust me, and I appreciate that. But when someone can say, I came to the city and I did X, Y, and Z, mm-hmm. and it worked out really well, you know, I tell people all the time, I'm happy to give you advice, but go in the community and get it from other people who have maybe come from all over the world and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So that's really great.
I agree completely.
I also want to thank, we are sitting at Coast Roast Coffee on Magazine Street. They have besides having great coffee, they have a really nice little room that Kevin Pito, the owner, is gracious enough to let me use from time to time. So I want to shout them out. They make great coffee. It's a great spot if you're wandering up and down Magazine Street. So check that out. It's between Napoleon and Louisiana Avenue. So there's not as many places. As you get further towards the Irish Channel and the Lower Garden District, there are more shops. So this part of Magazine doesn't get quite the traffic. It's also really close to Imperial Woodpecker Snowballs, which is a terrific snowball stand. So you might have a snowball for the kids and a coffee for yourself. But I appreciate them giving us the opportunity to do this today. Again, we're going to put links to the podcast and how they can hook up with you in the show notes. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to my daughters to close us out.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.